I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The election was last night, and we'll look at what happened with David Trek, the political pundit, economist, and former MLA, joins me now to discuss the surprise BC Liberal victory despite the Premier not winning her seat. Where will Christy Clark run? Why were the polls wrong? What happened with the NDP? What happens to Adrian Dix? We'll figure out answers to those questions and more. StrategicThoughts.com is the website for more. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program, David Trek. Mr. Trek, good morning.
Thank you for doing this, Joe.
Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. What went wrong last night?
This is something that will be debated amongst New Democrats and pollsters and reporters for years to come. My view is that the NDP, as they say in hockey, ragged the puck. That is to say, it went into the election campaign with a significant lead in the polls, took that lead for granted, and essentially ran a campaign to defend that lead rather than reinforcing why change is necessary and trying to reach out and convince an increasing number of voters to vote for change. So in the competition during the course of the campaign, while the NDP was essentially treading water, the Liberals were able to drive a very effective message back to the people who traditionally vote Liberal. The polls, particularly Angus Reid, had shown for over a year that about a third of all 2009 Liberal voters were no longer going to vote Liberal, and as much as half of that number would vote NDP. Clearly what happened on election night was the Liberals were able to convince those people to come back home and vote Liberal.
And in terms of, I read something on Twitter that people who were polled opted not to tell the truth, that they were going to vote Liberal out of fear or embarrassment. Did you hold much stock in that?
No, I don't. I think that most people realize that when the poll was basically anonymous, particularly with this form of online polling that's done, what the pollsters do is they construct a panel of people that they poll regularly on things like what brand of cornflakes do you like, and then all of a sudden they'll choose a random sample out of thousands of people they have on these product panels and sample just those people on their political views. I don't think it is a matter so much of lying to the pollster as it is that people change their mind when they walk into a ballot box. Most people are not political junkies like me. They devote little or no attention to political questions. They're concerned about what affects them, and most people, if they are going to vote, at least a significant number of the people when they are going to vote, are subject to changing their mind or making up their mind in the polling station. I think that's what happened with a lot of people who were unhappy Liberals. When it came to going to the polling station, they reverted to their old habits and voted Liberal.
What about the idea that people that said that they were going to vote, who were answering these polls, didn't actually end up voting, and that maybe the pollsters need to screen their samples better?
Well, that's definitely a problem. The pollsters clearly lost almost as much as the NDP last night in the sense that, who's going to pay these guys to run an opinion poll on political intentions when they are so grossly inaccurate? And this wasn't being off by the standard of error or two times the standard of error. This was off by over three or close to four times the standard of error. So that they were completely out of the ballpark, and it wasn't just one of them. It was the two most reputable polling companies in British Columbia. So their credibility is in tatters, and I don't know how they reestablish their credibility unless they get out there and accurately predict a couple of elections. Right now, who's going to pay them to do that?
Yeah. The parties themselves, they do internal polling, don't they?
Yes, they do, and it's a closely guarded secret. I know that Keith Baldry on Global Noon News reported apparently that insiders commented on what the internal polls were for both the Liberals and the NDP, and according to Keith's report, both Liberals and the NDP were as surprised as the Angus Reid and Ipsos Reid that the outcome last night was a shock to everyone.
When did you know that this was going to happen? I mean, was it like the rest of us watching it on TV last night?
Exactly. Yeah. I thought the issue was how large would the NDP majority be?
Yeah.
And I even thought there was a possibility of a substantial sweep. The exact opposite proved to be the case.
Yeah. Did you play the what-if game? Like, I know that Keith Baldry brought this up last night at the tail end of the coverage on Global. Had Carol James been the leader, would the results have been different, do you think?
Carol James did slightly better in terms of percentage of the vote than Adrian Dix did last night. It is hard to say if Carol had been leader whether the election would have been held last night or whether a snap election would have been called earlier. We don't know what the circumstances are. I think that a different leader and a different campaign were needed. Adrian, and I think he's one of the hardest working, most capable people I've ever worked with, made some mistakes during the campaign. He did not perform as well as he ought to have during the course of the leadership debate. Appeared nervous in the opening statement, and referred to his age at, on the question of the backdated memo. Those were mistakes. He also switched on the Kinder Morgan issue after saying earlier in the campaign and over the course of the last year that they hadn't made their submission and application yet, and hence a judgment wouldn't be rendered on it. I think some may say that those are minor things, but in the course of a campaign, they can become substantial. If you add those errors to the nature of the campaign not driving home a ballot box question, I think the combination of errors by the leader and the weak campaign would both have to be corrected to have seen a difference last night.
Do you think he stays on as leader? No.
No, it's just a question of when. I don't think anybody's going to force him out with some sort of an ultimatum. Adrian's an experienced politician and knows that he cannot lead the party into another election. The party also knows that it takes time and energy to organize a leadership convention. There's no urgency to it. It may well happen two or three years from now, but I expect that there will be consultation within the party and a planned transition and leadership convention will occur sometime in the next two or three years.
So there will be an interim leader for the New Democratic Party in the House. Will that be someone who's...
No, I think Adrian will remain as leader until our leadership convention is called.
I see. And so are there names emerging already? I mean, is there an 801 campaign?
No, there isn't. But I just tweeted a moment ago that I expect as soon as the House sits, the Liberals will be taunting every New Democrat who stands up in question period saying that they are campaigning for the leadership. It's a silly little game, but it will go on.
Yeah. Are the chattering classes, people in the traditional media and on social media, who are political junkies like yourself, do you find that they've been isolated from where the people are looking at last night's result?
Well, I think last night's result clearly establishes that. The chattering classes are obviously out of touch with the 1.5 million or more people who go to vote.
Yeah, and so what happens now? I mean, do we not listen to you guys? Or?
Well, chattering classes will continue to chatter between themselves, but I think the challenge for such folks is to figure out how to get in touch with ordinary voters and what they are about to do, how to engage them more in discussion. And one of the things I find so frustrating about the election is as successful as the Liberal campaign was in focusing on the economy, it was basically founded on untruths. BC doesn't lead the country or come anywhere close to leading the country in terms of job creation. Job creation has been stagnant for over a year. It's unrealistic to think that the 2013-14 budget is balanced. And there is no way we are going to be significantly decreasing our debt. We'll be lucky if we can reduce the rate of increase of the debt. Notwithstanding all of those falsehoods, the Liberals were successful in repeating their message, and they didn't let any attempt at truth get in the way. Now, I don't know what you can do in terms of trying to educate the voters that the message that they are receiving is based on falsehoods, because obviously they bought it hook, line, and sinker.
Could Adrian Dix have come out in the campaign, maybe brought up Gordon Campbell and called maybe the Liberals and Christy Clark a liar, maybe?
One's always reluctant to use the L word, but I certainly think it would have been appropriate to respond more aggressively and more than just once. What happened was the NDP would put out reality checks saying that the assertions by the Liberals are untrue, and then drop it as if 1.5 million voters who had heard the message understood it and agreed. To get a refutation across, you have to go at it continually. You can't just say it once and think everybody heard it and agrees with you.
The Green Party and their performance last night, I know they've won a seat. I mean, that's by all objective accounts a good thing. Did they split the vote and prevent the NDP winning this election, do you think?
That, again, is something that will be argued about forever. I don't think anyone owns that vote. The voters, many of them may have stayed home if there wasn't a green option, or may have voted for another party. It is true that in Oak Bay, Gordon Head, where Andrew Weaver won, the NDP vote was 16% in 16 points lower than it was in the 2009 election. So clearly a significant portion of Andrew Weaver's vote it probably came from the previous NDP voters, but a good chunk of it came from elsewhere as well.
Yeah. In terms of the NDP and where it goes from here on in, is the party still relevant? And I mean, these are questions that people in the party will have to deal with now and into the next election, I guess. I mean, a lot of soul searching this morning.
Well, if you look at the history of non-capitalist or non-free enterprise or however you want to label it, that back in from the pre-World War II period to the CCF to the NDP, there's always been a left-of-center alternative concerned about social equity and justice issues just as much as about economic issues. So whatever that left-of-center coalition is called, the history of British Columbia is to have a very divided electorate with 30-40% in the camp, and it may be doomed to be a perpetual opposition, but it is as much a movement as a political party, and it's not going to go away.
What do you think we can expect from four more years of Christy Clark? I know you put out a pretty classy tweet last night saying that they deserve a honeymoon period.
Yeah, it's not going to do any good to be in perpetual campaign mode. We need to shift into informed discussion of policies. And by informed discussion, I mean rational and calm, not screeching at each other that you're ending the world because of what's being done. And the government deserves that as much as the NDP needs it to reestablish the NDP's credibility of being other than constantly campaigning. So what happens during that time, the government essentially has a blank check. They can do anything. Let's hope that they want to build a broader-based coalition and don't do anything extremely controversial like they did with the HST that almost destroyed their party. I think they learned from that as much as the NDP learned from it.
Yeah.
But what they do, we really don't have too much of a hint about from the election campaign.
Where do you think Christy Clark runs for this by-election? And will she be unopposed, do you think?
I don't know if she will be unopposed. There are a lot of rank-and-file New Democrats who might object to that. And it's not as simple as the leader of the party or the president of the party or the upper echelon dictating to the local constituency that they must not run a candidate. That's a more complicated matter. There's some speculation she could run in West Vancouver, Capilano. Ralph Sultan is 79 years old. It's one of the, tied with Vancouver Quilchina, as the two safest Liberal seats in the entire province. And Ralph Sultan may be persuaded to step down and give that safe seat to the Liberals.
When we arranged
the leader to Dick Clark
for her to run there,
yeah.
When we were planning to talk, we decided last week that we'd talk after the election, and so a lot of the questions that I had, I've had to change, obviously, owing to what happened last night. I guess the premise that I went into last night's election was that the NDP was going to win, and if they won. Because when the NDP's won in the past in 91 and in 72, they've won because there's a split of this so-called free enterprise vote. What happened with that? And was it because the Conservatives collapsed, or did they just go home to the Liberals thinking that this was the only alternative to, say, an Adrian Dix government?
It's a combination of the two. The collapse of the Conservatives clearly played a role. And to the credit of the Liberals, they focused on demolishing the Conservative credibility as phase one of their campaign, and they succeeded in that. Some might argue with considerable help from within the Conservative Party. It's also the case, however, that the Liberals had antagonized up to a third of their own 2009 supporters, and they ran a very effective campaign to bring those people back home to vote for them.
Yeah. Say in 1996, when I guess you were the MLA for North Van, right?
Right.
And you ran for re-election that year and lost. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. Did you guys think you were going to win that election? The party?
No. It was close. I think it was a surprise. I knew I would not win on the North Shore. I mean, in the North Shore, CCF held it from, I think it was from 38 till the early 40s. The NDP under Colin Gableman in 72 and me in 91. So it's sort of every 20 or 30 years that the NDP breaks through in the North Shore, and it was not likely that I would get reelected. There was a chance to win government, and we ended up winning government, but it was very tight.
Yeah.
It wasn't expected. I think it surprised everyone.
So would you rank last night as a bigger upset than, say, 96?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I think it would have been hard to find anybody on May 13th, including staunch Liberals, that expected a solid Liberal majority government to be elected.
I understand that you'll be on Top Story tonight on BC One.
That's my understanding, yes. I'll be on a panel saying much what I'm saying now, only a little tighter, I think, not quite as much time.
Well, you and I are big fans of the work that the Arts Club does, and I'll be there, but I'll be watching you online on the replay on BC One tonight.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for this, David.
Okay.
StrategicThoughts.com is the website. David Schreck on the line from North Vancouver. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.